Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 26, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, and as we are wont to do on a casual Friday, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And then, maybe she'll give us a rundown of the Oscar nominees. Isabel Gillies will be joining us from isabelgillies.com. Also on the program, surprise, not surprise, Trump wanted to fire Mueller. But who wanted us to know that? Meanwhile, the DACA battle heats up. And the secret society has found the texts. Representative Pat Meehan will not seek re-election in Pennsylvania's 7th, that's Mindy's district, after Obamacare made him harass a staffer. EPA weakens protections from major sources of pollution, and 72% of Republicans think that Donald Trump is a good role model for children.
I am not a role model.
Nikki Haley, meanwhile, says rumors of an affair with Trump are disgusting.
Unfair.
Totally true, actually. We try and make it super disgusting.
You could just say untrue.
I asked her to say disgusting. And ICE now reportedly tracking license plates all across the country. Yes, happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Why wouldn't they be? All this and more on today's program. Yes, it's another Friday, another relentless week of insanity in the Trump era. And I just want to start with this ICE story and get this out of the way, because I really think that we are, regardless of what happens in 2018, in terms of the Democrats picking up seats in the House, taking over the House, even if they were to take over the Senate, I mean, perhaps the Trump administration would decide to change its position on immigrants. But I find that highly unlikely. And ICE has always been, I think, a somewhat problematic agency. But now they have been unshackled and are despicable. There's really no other word for it. The leadership, and I would say, you know, sorry, dude, you're working for ICE, you're a scumbag. You have skills that you could get hired at a local police department, maybe, or maybe work for the county sheriff, or I don't know, become a security guard. But if you're someone who gets off and tracking human beings like they were prey in this way, then you're a scumbag. And I really think that we are probably not far off until people start to sort of actively try and jam what's happening with ICE. And this story is This is, it's disturbing, but far less grotesque than the ones of them arresting and deporting people who have been in this country for decades, who have family members here, to countries that they have a little connection with. But The Verge reports that ICE has officially gained agency-wide access to a nationwide license plate recognition database. This is according to a contract finalized this month. The system gives the agency access to billions of license plate records and new powers of real-time location tracking, raising significant concerns from civil libertarians, really from anybody, I think, who's like a remotely thoughtful human being. You'd be worried about this. They get it from a private corporation, Vigilant Solutions, which is the leading network for license plate recognition data. They have amassed a database of more than 2 billion license plate photos. By ingesting data from partners like vehicle repossession agencies and other private groups. So, this I thought was relevant. The new license plate reader contract comes after years of internal lobbying by the agency. So, in other words, ICE has been pushing for this for a long time. And they tested this system back in 2012. 2 years later, the agency opened, had an open solicitation for technology like this. There was a pushback from civil liberties groups. And at that time, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, who, and I am not lauding this guy. In many other respects, I found the guy to be horrible. But that gives you a sense of just sort of like how far we've fallen here. Jay Johnson canceled the solicitation shortly afterwards, citing privacy concerns. And then, once he shut it down, there were two apparently ICE field offices that formed rogue contracts with this private entity. This will give you a sense of just how scumbaggy ICE is as an agency. So that's where we are with that. Pleasant, I know.
I mean, what you said before about how people are going to start resisting this, it's already happened. There's an interesting documentary on Vice, actually, about a church that's protecting some undocumented families from ICE, and I imagine we'll see more of that.
I imagine we'll see more of that, and I hope, you know, that we end up seeing stuff like... And look, this type of stuff takes a lot of guts, and I'm not advocating anybody do this because I'm not prepared to do it myself. But you know, there was, I guess, on Twitter, I remember early on in the administration, this administration, seeing people tweet out ICE agents seen in the South Bronx, that type of stuff, and. That to me seems like those type of networks seem to me, social media is sort of a perfect vehicle for those type of things. And maybe people will be developing apps that will automatically, you put in the location, boom, sends it right to Twitter, gets repeated. I mean, there's all sorts of different things that can happen, technology that will just make it, you know, harder. The same way Waze makes it harder for, I guess, to get it a speeding ticket because it indicates where the cops are. You know, these things can be crowdsourced. And if there was ever an area that seemed ripe for it and just for it, that would be it in my mind. Now I think I just threw away my sound sheet accidentally. Oh, no, here it is. Okay, we'll get to the good one in there, but I want to do this one first. So last night... I was going to Chris Hayes's program to talk about Stormy Daniels, right? She's the adult film performer who, I guess it was in 2006, had an affair with Donald Trump. And we know this from an interview that she did in 2011 with Insight Magazine or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what it was. And last night... She did some interviews with one of those entertainment shows. I can't remember what it was. And they asked her, did you have an affair with Donald Trump? And apparently all she did was like, just made a face because there's an NDA. And they said, is there an NDA? And she was just like, So there's a whole interview where she won't answer any of the questions that people want to ask her. But apparently the response is, and, you know, I was going to Hayes to talk about that. But last night there was a story that broke in the New York Times that Donald Trump had ordered Robert Mueller fired in June. But for Don McGahn, the White House counsel, who I should say is also a despicable human being. He was bending all sorts of stuff back in the day as he was representing the pest man, hot tub, Tom DeLay. But the response from right-wing media has been interesting, to say the least. We will play now one that is not the most interesting, but is fairly interesting. This is Fox and Friends reporting this morning. And here's the thing, man. Like, when you find out it's true, is it really important?
That we've been wearing ever since. Meanwhile, let's take a look at the cover of the New York Times up there in the corner, Ted, this corner over here. There's a big story that apparently the president of the United States last June wanted to fire Robert Mueller because the president felt that he had a bunch of conflicts of interest, could not adequately be the special counsel.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, they can't even get the story right. He didn't want to fire Mueller. He ordered Mueller fired. There's a difference, right? There's a difference. I can want a lot of things, but he took an action to get it done. It's just that everyone around him basically said, we won't do it. We'll quit before we do it.
It's a deep state.
Deep state. Don McGahn.
Right. And so the actual but the president in Davos, which we're going to bring some of that sound today, he doesn't think the story was all that true, maybe calling it fake. Take a listen to the president.
Fake news, folks. Fake news.
What's your message today?
Typical New York Times fake stories.
Did you try and fire Robert Mueller?
So speaking of typical New York Times, you look in the first paragraph.
Now, pause it for 1 second. The one problem that these guys have on this Friday morning early is that 10 hours earlier on their own network, Sean Hannity had confirmed it from his own sources. So it's not just the New York Times, but let's let these guys live with that. Continue.
Speaking of typical New York Times, you look in the first paragraph, all of this reporting based on four people who are told of the matter.
Right.
It also screams of a leak from the special counsel, because we did know a little bit about this. We heard back in June that there were talks of the president wasn't happy with Bob Mueller. What would he do?
Right.
But some new details that may or may not actually be true.
All right. Well, the president says it's fake news. That happened last June. Do you, you know, it's something we have to tell you about because it is a headline in the New York Times. What do you think about that? Do you even care? Something you probably do care about is immigration, and Congress is working on a plan.
Do you even care? We have to tell you because it's a headline in the New York Times. Wow.
Even if it were real, we wouldn't care.
Do you guys think that they sit around and they divvy it up like, who's gonna do the heavy lifting today? Like, and she just goes, I'll do the one like, do you care? I'll do that one. And Ducey's just like, whoa, look at this. And then the other dude, the greaser, says something to the effect of like, I'm going to try and undercut this thing by implying that it's fake news.
I think Hegseth is a student of the Kilmeade School.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter, we will talk more about this. And we will talk about those four people who were told about it. Because I got news for you, folks. This did not come from Robert Mueller's investigation. We'll be back after this. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. And one of the things we like to do around Casual Friday after we have done our morning calisthenics, we're all wearing our yoga pants because it's Casual Friday. And so we take that opportunity to get limber heading into the weekend. But after we do that, we like to listen to this.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
You know, it just occurs to me that one of the rare Jimmy Reefer Cake songs where we hear, I think, from Mrs. Reefer Cake as well, bringing in the harmony, and it's a very sweet rendition, and could it be a no better way than to bring Cliff Schachter onto the program? Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Are you talking through a headset? You sound a little muffled today.
I am talking through a headset. Is that okay?
Will you try and try the no headset? I don't know what happened there.
Okay, let's try the old fashioned way. Let's
yeah,
see how that works.
Let's do that, Grandpa. Let's see if you know how.
Hello.
Oh yeah, that's much better.
Okay, I'm headset free.
All right, great. All right, so now Cliff, big story last night. Not terribly surprising, is it?
The fact that he tried to fire Mr. Mueller, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, we all sort of suspected this, and there's sort of plenty of other things on the train to obstruction bill that we knew he had done already that were out there publicly trying to get Jeff Sessions, who recused himself, which led to Mueller being appointed, trying to get Sessions to resign so he could get somebody else in there, you know, to hopefully quash the whole thing. That was out there. He'd admitted to why he fired Comey, both when he was hanging out with the Russian A-team in the Oval Office and not inviting American reporters in there. Also admitted it on TV with Lester Holt. So there's so many other related. I mean, if he fired Comey to stop the Russia investigation, his words, right? The ridiculous Russia investigation and Trump, and you know, there's nothing there, or whatever the hell he said. So if he's done that, if he wanted to get rid of Sessions to get somebody else in there to shut it down, which had been reported already, then no, why would this be a shock, right? I mean, the only shocking part of it is that, what's his name, again, threatened to resign. You know, that we could have had a Saturday Night Massacre kind of situation. That's the only thing I think that is at all, I mean, I don't know if it's surprising, but at least sort of, yeah, it gives you a wow moment about the whole thing versus Trump wanting to do this, you know?
I mean, is that...
That's my thoughts in here.
Yeah, I mean, are you surprised that McGahn said that? I mean, because McGahn's not an idiot, right? I mean, there's two ways that you can perceive McGahn's actions. One is Don McGahn said, President Trump, on a moral and ethical level, you shouldn't do this because we live in a democracy and there should be a certain amount of independence. And clearly there are reasons to investigate and you shouldn't do it. Or do you think Don McGahn said, look, much better to keep him on the inside, pissing out on some level. And we will just systemically and systematically degrade his credibility by coming out with a parade of stories that will try and degrade his credibility over time. Trust me on this. I mean, isn't it just more likely that Don McGahn right. was like, not brain dead? I imagine there was no one in the White House who thought that it would be a good idea at that point.
No, I mean, he's done enough, again, as I was saying, I mean, we were talking about, he's done enough publicly that at some point, if he doesn't end up being charged with obstruction of justice, I think that term has kind of lost its usefulness. I mean, he's not been smart enough to hide his actions because he's not smart enough to hide his actions. I mean, it's been quite public. So, yeah, McGahn, I mean, you know, if he was like, yeah, sure, fire him, well, then he's obstructing justice, too. He's not an idiot. I mean, I don't think so. And, you know, he's certainly not as dumb as the guy who occupies the Oval Office. So it all makes sense that, you know, and maybe we're not giving him credit. Maybe he does have some ethics. I don't know, for that matter. Maybe that gave him pause. Maybe that he has respect for the democratic process. But in the end, certainly you don't want to get yourself sucked up into the vortex of criminality that circles around Donald Trump and the many things that he is already being looked into for. Why would you want to be there? I mean, I don't really know why you'd want to work with the guy anyhow, because there's inevitable that might happen to you. But this all seems reasonable to me, right? But that this guy was like, this is no, don't do it.
All right. Well, let's put a pin in this, because it was very funny to watch how this was reported last night. So, of course, the story comes out in the New York Times, and the go-to, if you are a right-wing media star, or even not a star, is to be poo-poo the New York Times. And we should say, Donald Trump said, fake news, not real, fake news, everybody, while he was in Davos. And here is Sean Hannity reporting this and poo-pooing it. Plus, and someone has cut together, this is Sean Hannity. The first moment you hear Sean Hannity will be from 9:35, I think it was, in the evening, p.m. And then it will jump to 9:58 p.m., when things change.
The same exact show.
The same exact show.
I would just like to say, though, that this is my favorite thing that Sean Hannity has ever done. And there's so many that really, honestly, this is that good.
This is that good. Here is Sean Hannity reporting on the New York Times story.
Now, tonight, for example, they're trying to change the story. At this hour, the New York Times is trying to distract you. They have a story that Trump wanted Mueller fired sometime last June. And our sources, and I've checked in with many of them, they're not confirming that tonight. And the president's attorney dismissed the story and says, no, no comment. We're not going there. And how many times has the New York Times and others gotten it wrong? All right, so we have sources tonight just confirming to Ed Henry that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump wanted to fire the special counsel for conflict. Does he not have the right to raise those questions? You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night. We have a shocking video of the day to bring you, by the way. This footage comes to us from Arizona, where you see that red SUV, high-speed police chase, ultimately the suspect's...
Wow. Can we run that back again and just go? So just so that people understand here, Sean Hannity apparently did get word that it was OK. He confirmed it with his own sources, which apparently was not repeated the next day.
Fox.
Yeah. But here is Sean Hannity. And it's
here's a car accident. Hey, look away.
Like, hey, oh my God, look at the car accident. But the best part is...
Look over there. And like he ducks under his desk and runs away.
Can we slow-mo this? Can we slow-mo it? Is it possible or no? Because the look on Sean Hannity's face when he's like, well, okay, so maybe he did do this thing that I just 20 minutes ago said would have been, you know.
He kind of, maybe, sort of.
Yeah, big deal. Here we go. Here we go.
So we have sources tonight just confirming to Ed Henry that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump wanted to fire the special counsel for conflict. Does he not have the right to raise those questions? You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night.
We got to deal with this tomorrow night. Yeah.
Had a slow motion car crash. God.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Okay, maybe didn't do it.
Oh, my gosh. It's a squirrel. That's so Sean Hannity.
We're not going to play it again.
Is so the level of intelligence of Sean Hannity is the show. Yeah, go for it.
We can't hear you. You got to just talk right into the phone. Sorry.
I apologize. I thought it was. It's so perfect, Sean Hannity. It's so the level of intellect and just, you know, the metaphor of look at the car accident, look away, which is really pretty much Sean Hannity's entire career. Of getting people to look away from anything that matters for the garbage. I mean, it's classic.
Okay.
You should honestly be sure. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, let's talk about this. Okay. So it's interesting. It's not terribly shocking that Donald Trump wanted to do this. What is interesting to me, And I've said the same thing about the Stormy Daniels story too, frankly. But what's interesting to me is, why do we know this story now? This is an old story. It is from June of last year. It is seven, eight months ago. It was supposedly from, here's the key quotes from the New York Times. This is according, it says, Trump ordered the firing last June of Robert Mueller, the special counsel overseeing the Russia investigation, according to four people told of the matter. So now the matter is that Don McGahn got the order to tell Ron Rosenstein to fire Mueller. And Don McGahn said, I'm not doing it. Now, that doesn't need to go out of that room. So four people were told about the matter, probably were told by Don McGahn or people around Don McGahn. When people like that hear about this stuff, there's two scenarios, right? It could be people around Don McGahn at the time, let's say this is back in June, so it could be Reince Priebus, could be Steve Bannon, it could be I think Sean Spicer was gone at that point. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he wasn't. It could be people like that.
When was the Mooch there?
I think the Mooch was there actually a little bit later, but it could be people like that.
I forgot his long tenure when that was.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
But it could be people like that, or it could be people who are just friends with Don McGahn.
Friends, or it could be deputies and, you know, or others that work for him in the department there. I mean,
simpatico Don McGahn people, right? Who would not say anything to the press unless Don McGahn said yes. So the question is, if it's the latter case, and this is from Politico, lawyers involved with Mueller's investigation viewed the report as potentially ominous sign. It's one more brick in the wall, said a Washington lawyer representing another senior Trump aide in the Russia probe, who added that the most interesting aspect of the Trump-Mueller story was that people are leaking this shit. And that is also, to me, the most important stuff. I was saying this last night on Hates, and this is what this lawyer said. That is a sign to me people perceive the ship has sprung a leak, and it's time to make themselves look good. This story makes Donald Trump look very bad. It makes Don McGahn look like he is, you know, from A Few Good Men, or whatever that movie is.
He's a Few Good Men, or he's like, you know, Cincinnatus coming back to protect the Roman Republic.
Exactly.
From all the...
And the attorney said, to some extent, I think the fact of the leaking is almost most significant, that we've reached an inflection point where people at the center of things feel the need to redeem themselves at the expense of the president. Now, if it was Steve Bannon and sort of like some outside force that was doing this, that's a different story. But it's a very weird time to do that. The other thing is that this could be is a warning that Donald Trump is thinking about doing this again to fire Mueller.
That's what I was thinking.
That's also
I
possible.
I think the first one is possible, certainly very possible too, especially being that Trump is going to be interviewed and, you know, that they've got other big interviews that are potentially coming up. It wasn't Sessions, just interviewed. I mean, so they maybe think they're getting closer to the denouement, if you will. Go ahead.
Well, it was just 2 days ago where Donald Trump said, I would go under oath with Mueller if my lawyers allow it, right? And so he's talking about Don McGahn.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's just very interesting that this is coming out now. Like I say, the underlying story, not really a surprise. The idea that we're hearing about it now, that has some significance. And I would also argue the same thing with the Stormy Daniels. There's no reason for us to hear about this now. There's just no logic to it. Unless somebody wanted to point out, and we already knew all the stuff about the affair, right? Because it's already out there in a 2011 interview. Somebody could have just pointed to that rather than point to the payments.
That was the key to that, was the payment part.
And I don't know. Maybe I would imagine.
I mean,
to me, what that sounds like is somebody, you know, I don't know, throwing a rock at or just basically planting a flag and saying to Robert Mueller's investigation, look here.
I agree.
Here.
Because then it came out that 100, I'm trying to remember where I read it, $130,000. The exact payoff amount was magically taken out of Donald Trump's campaign account. Because you wouldn't be dumb enough to think Donald Trump would actually pay for anything like this out of his own money. He would only do that with other people's money, which is how he's lived his entire life. So now you're bringing campaign finance violations and other things in there as if there aren't enough charges of various sorts already against the guy.
Well,
including other campaign finance violations.
Here's also what it does.
Yes.
It also shows the MO in which payments are made from the Trump organization, right?
Good
because
point,
you've got 11,000 LLCs filed that day in Delaware that Trump's lawyer filed that LLC. The Wall Street Journal reporters, very adept. I do not think they're going through 11,000 filings every day of the campaign to find one that matches up with a Trump lawyer. I think this was a way of saying, like, look over here.
Hey, look at that LLC. Maybe they've done some other interesting things, too.
Exactly. And so I think that a lot of this stuff is maybe coming to a head, and people are starting to get the idea that, like, I need to do some damage control.
Right.
But
the end is near.
Well,
maybe it's not, but I'm saying some people are thinking to themselves, at least we're getting closer, especially with the McGahn story and some of the others. And, you know, let's make ourselves look good and make sure people don't think that we're complicit in all of this.
Now, look,
the Stormy Daniels thing is a little different, but it may be somebody else who's jousted with, his lawyer, Cohn, trying to throw him under the bus too, who wants to look better. Who knows? Yeah, maybe it's all coming from McGahn.
now here's
a lawyer.
Well, here's the other thing. I just want to pivot here to talk about sort of something more substantive, because the relevance of this type of palace intrigue in a vacuum, in my mind, is nil. I mean, I don't care. The value of something like this is, if the administration is under this type of pressure, it means it makes it harder for them to flex their muscles in the context of DACA and immigration. And yesterday, I guess it was, maybe it was this morning, I don't know, last night, the White House leaked, and then was released early, a White House proposal on what they would do for DACA. And this is coming from Stephen Miller, apparently. DACA amnesty, but at the cost of a $25 billion wall, but even more problematic, increase of ICE agents, faster deportations, stronger interior enforcement. In other words, like an internal secret police of ICE agents, and massive cuts.
The agents out there who aren't busy. At this point, maybe?
Indeed. And then massive cuts to legal immigration and eliminating family migration. And so it would lead to reductions of 40 to 50% in legal immigration. This is the deal. It appears to be rejected from the get-go by Democrats, but this is what's going on behind the scenes.
Right. I mean, again, they feel like, at least with, you know, his dumb, stupid wall campaign problem, campaign promise. And then, of course, the wall is a symbol, too, of their racism and, you know, and then the white nationalists get happy because if you're cutting immigration by 40-50%, we know who they're bothered by, you know, who's immigrating here. And so it's sort of like, maybe we'll give in on DACA, which, by the way, is popular with Republicans, too. As well as Democrats, overwhelmingly popular. So maybe we give in on that, but we'll get some of the other stuff to show that we're still tough on all this stuff and that we still hate brown people. It's that kind of a thing. I can't see that. I can't see the terms that were put out there, this thing working. If they're willing to trade it for just some money for the stupid wall, I still don't know if they'd get anywhere, but maybe they would. Maybe that would be a price. Maybe some Democrats would think that's a price worth paying to help these people who are here not have to be deported. You know what I mean? But the other stuff, that's a bridge too far.
Right. I mean, because then you're also really materially impacting people. So what are the Democrats doing? I mean, give me your take on what the Democrats did in terms of ending him, because I guess that only happened 5 days ago, right? The government shutdown ended 5 days ago. Seems like a year ago. But what was your perspective on how that all wound down?
I know a lot of people were very hard on that and thought it was the worst, you know, it was terrible. I didn't agree with that. I saw that side and I understood it. And I don't know why you'd want to make, you know, DACA is not something necessarily you want to make standalone. It makes it harder to do. But it seems to me if you can, a 3 week extension of what you can pull off is freeing 8.9 million hostages, which is what we did, these kids who need health care. That's a good thing to do because you've then at least removed that from the equation. And it seems to me now, if you want to negotiate with this guy, I mean, I've seen a bunch of other people say this, and I know people see it as a racist symbol, but what are they going to end up doing? There's like environmental studies that are done there, which probably aren't the worst thing. You know, he's going to add stupid stuff to the wall. He's, you know, like, oh, parts will be see-through, and then there's mountains and whatever. You know, it's like, I almost don't think he's going to do much with it. I would do straight-up trade. I wouldn't give him $25 billion, though. But if he wants a couple billion dollars or something like that, I might be willing to go for that.
Well, what about the other immigration? What about ending family migration? What about ending legal? And so
no, none of that.
Now, so
that's all crap. That's all. The wall is a waste of money. The wall doesn't actually do anything to anybody. It doesn't hurt anybody. All the other stuff will hurt people. And I don't think you can trade hurting some people for others.
Why did they start the government shutdown? I mean, it seems to me on Friday of last week, a week ago today, the idea of a chip for 3 weeks was on the table already.
You're saying why the Democrats start the shutdown?
Yeah, I mean, if they were going to
strong?
Yeah, like, and if they were going to, I mean, look, I get it. Seven or eight of these people defected, and maybe there was a couple others. But why didn't Chuck Schumer know this? Why did Chuck Schumer go into a government shutdown without the knowledge of that he did not have a caucus that was unified, when the offer that he ultimately, they ultimately basically folded for was already on the table, as far as I could tell, on Friday. I mean, that wasn't new, right? Chip for 3 weeks. That was being floated around a week from Thursday.
I think he went into the shutdown without sound strategy. And I think, frankly, that's where, if you want to blame, if we're going to blame him, he absolutely can be blamed for that.
Right.
Because you're right. In the end,
he had no plan.
Something he probably could have gotten anyhow. I still think he should have done that, accepted that maybe initially. And again, the key is, you don't have to do the government shutdown. The key is to get that part of things off the table, as far as I'm concerned. So I agree with getting that part of it off the table. But you're right. I mean, I saw it floated around. If that deal could have been actually had, which it looked like it could have been, you know, before a shutdown, that is what I would have done. I mean, again, it's a cleaner message. You know, there's still a lot of sympathy for people that came here as kids who are part of DACA. And I think, I think that that's a winnable fight on its own, you know. But I would have tried to make that into something where, if you're going to shut the government down, you can shut the government down over that. You've got a very clean message as to what they're doing. And you have a lot of sympathetic cases out there. You've got people being deported who've been here 30 years. You know, so with all that in the background, I think there's, you know, so I don't know.
Why do you think
Schumer doesn't necessarily seem to be the greatest negotiator?
No, he doesn't seem to have a clue as to what he's doing, frankly. I mean, why would there be any? You've set these parameters for what you think the Democrats should basically draw the line. I tend to agree with you on them. Why in the world would anybody think that the Democrats would hold that line?
That's a hell of a question. And why would anybody think, frankly, that in the end Schumer would? I'm not sure, you know. And so,
well, I mean,
you're right.
I think Schumer has no idea. I mean, Schumer, look, you know, there. It's not like a Senate leader has the ability to force different members of his caucus to do anything. He develops a certain amount of trust from the caucus that he knows what he's doing. And as far as I can tell, there can't be anybody who thinks he knows what he's doing. Why would you shut the government down for three days to get what you could have gotten on the day before? You hold out. And if you either shut the government down and you show that you mean it, or you don't do it because you don't have the forces to fight the fight that you want to fight, and you wait 3 weeks. But this is the worst of both worlds.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. He should have basically, I think, stood up for him. And if he could have decoupled, he's done that right at the beginning. Again, I think that he's, you know, some of it maybe is his lack of leadership. Some of it is, you know, there's just this genetic trait that still is there among Democrats for cowardice that is just incredibly frustrating. And, you know, so some of these folks who are running for reelection in either purple or red states, again, I don't know what it takes for them to learn that when you stand up strong for things, people actually respect you. And yeah, if it's something that's hugely unpopular, that can be a problem, but this isn't that, you know, and in these states we're talking about, some of them have less immigration. And so there isn't as much sympathy in them. And I'm not saying the numbers are as good in, you know, West Virginia as they are in California,
right.
But I still think the fight can be had, the argument can be made, and you can stand up very strongly for this particular principle and show people what's going on and people being deported and make a case to people about that these folks came here as kids. And, you know, what's winning these races in the end, you know, what won for Doug Jones in Alabama was the incredible turnout by African-Americans. You know, I mean, yeah, there may be some white moderates switching over and women particularly repelled by Trump who were considering themselves independents or Republicans, repelled by the party's, you know, continuing to support a child molester for Senate. So, you know, that some of that's going on, but it really is the turnout that's doing this, that's changing things. That just in Wisconsin, where we had a 27-point turnaround electing a Democratic state senator in a seat that Scott Walker was so sure they were going to hold that he appointed the person in that seat to his cabinet.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, when you see that, that's because of the enthusiasm. And if you don't stand up for things, you lose that enthusiasm. And, you know, again, I'm not saying there aren't issues that can hurt you in some of these states that maybe, you know, that you don't dive into as sort of your core campaign message. But here, this is something you stand up for in principle. And frankly, some of these guys have done a really good job sticking together as a caucus in the past, you know, on the tax bill and on yep. on Obamacare. And I just, you know, but it's almost like social issues. They get so cowardly. And I don't get it. And I frankly, maybe that's on Chuck Schumer and other people there too. Yes, it's in our DNA, but maybe a better leader takes some polling to them and shows them what's been going on in some of these other races in Virginia and Alabama and Wisconsin and, you know, Washington State and Georgia and all these places where we've, you know, won much bigger numbers by standing up for these things.
And maybe Chuck Schumer can't convince them to do this. But if he can't convince them to do this, he should have a chalkboard somewhere in his office that says, I don't have these many votes. And so I'm not going to go, you know,
that's
it's like,
right.
It's like, if you don't, you know, if you don't have enough floaties, you don't go into the water with everybody. This is pretty basic
that's
stuff.
That's a good point.
And he doesn't seem to be doing
that's
either. Either he can't add and do math or his caucus doesn't even communicate with him. I mean, it seems to me. At one point, people have to start wondering, is Chuck Schumer worth it? They screwed up in December by punting before the tax bill. Even if they had wasted a week and a half on whatever it was, it would have made the tax bill harder to pass. They are empowering Republicans by their sheer incompetence, right? I mean, because I think his political, you know, where he is policy-wise is probably okay for, you know, a Democrat from New York State. But his leadership ability and his strategic vision seems to be completely absent. Totally absent.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I guess they'll have to ask themselves at some point how long it makes sense. You know, I mean, the problem with it is it's, as you know, it's not just based upon leadership. In fact, it may not be based upon that at all. It's based upon how many chits you've collected, who you've raised money for, and all this other garbage that really isn't. It's not about who's the best leader. Because my guess is that you can find a bunch of people that will be doing a better job than this. I would hope so. Or we're certainly bereft of leadership. Now, I mean, I don't know. I've never fully been impressed with Schumer when it comes to these kinds of things. So, you know, I try to kind of not make harsh judgments and then lay back and give people more time, but so far not so good, let's put it that way.
Who would you,
you know, again,
who do you think would be good in that spot in the Senate?
Elizabeth Warren might, you know, I don't know, I'd have to think about that, but she might. Of course, if she wants to run for president, then That may not be where she'd want to be anyhow.
Right.
But I could see her being a really good majority leader. She's certainly pretty smart and certainly has been, you know, I mean, in some of the ideas she's come up with and some of the you know, bringing together sort of a movement, the money she's been able to raise through small yep. donors.
She campaigned for Claire McCaskill in 2016, you know, where she was McCaskill that she was campaigning for, or was she campaigning with Clinton? I know she was being sent around to red states.
Yeah, she was.
And
I can't remember who it was. It wasn't McCaskill because McCaskill's up this year. But she was going around into red state races and was very still popular there because she leads with all the economic messages that are popular in these places. So, you know, that's off the top of my head. I have to sit down.
Merkley also seems like Merkley also strikes me as a guy who has been able to. I mean, he was the only senator who came out and supported Bernie Sanders publicly, but seems to have
True.
Been able to do that in a way that did not alienate any of the other senators and maintained relations with the Clinton people. I mean, it's this type of like.
No, that's a great point.
Awareness that I can do X and will not suffer Y consequences seems to be the type of skill set that you want in someone like this. But.
No, I think Merkley's another one, you know, and there's some others that would be worth looking at, I think, and thinking about. But maybe it is Merkley. And in his case, at least he's not somebody who seems to have presidential ambitions. I could be wrong, but I've never heard anything to that regard. So that might make the most sense, because that would be the one thing. If Elizabeth Warren wanted to run for president, that would affect how she'd be majority leader. And I think that there's two different skill sets there.
Yep.
And one would get in the way of the other. So maybe Merkley actually, I think, could be a great choice. You know, I have to think about who else is out there and who else is kind of, you know, has the courage and has stood forward and been willing to kind of lead on a number of these issues. But there's others. I would say I would throw out there someone like Sherrod Brown, but he's up for re-election and has to worry about that.
Right.
Because I think he could galvanize a lot of the party, too, and seems to have a lot of support. But I think not right now.
All right, well, Cliff, I'll give you another week. Come up with the answer,
let me see what I can do
and
for
make
you,
it and make it happen. I would like to see Chuck Schumer gone.
I will make it great again.
I think Chuck Schumer has shown he doesn't know what he's doing, and we don't have time for this type of incompetence. I don't care what his politics
He's
incompetent.
Yeah, it's not about politics.
Well, it's not about his ideology. I mean, when you're the leader of in the Senate or in the House, I mean, I would prefer someone obviously to the left, but at the end of the day, I want you to be able to count
from Wall Street.
I want you to be able to count and know, you know, what fights you should be fighting, what fights you can fight, and then, you know, somebody who will, I don't know, you know, convince a couple more people. But Cliffy,
yeah. Well. Always a pleasure, Sammy.
Thanks, Cliff. We'll talk to you soon, bud.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take this opportunity to... Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? We do. All right, maybe we'll get to... sort of interested in Isabel's piece about early menopause. For some reason, I know a lot of women who have had early menopause. Now, maybe that's just because I am old and I know a lot of old women, but I don't know if that's as prominent or typical of a thing. I don't know. But also we got the Oscars out, and it might be fun because one of these days, maybe next week, maybe the week before. Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. One of these days I'm going to have Chris Rosen on. And Chris Rosen, do you remember Chris Rosen? Are you familiar with Chris Rosen?
I think we had him on once since I've been here.
Yeah. Chris Rosen was the original Friday film guest. He was at Air America. He was a board op. And then he went, it was at the Huffington Post or Movie Line. Movie Line or Movie Phone or whatever it was. And it was about, we were about 2 years into it. He would recommend movies. where it turns out he wasn't even a movie critic. He was sort of faking it the whole time.
To you, his workplace knew that, but you
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah, no, it turned out at his workplace he was just sort of like, well, I'm a vertical editor. I just, you know, I just collect stuff. And I was like, wait, you're not a movie critic? He's like, no, not really. I'm like, what are you doing? And then, you know, so that went on for a while. And then we sort of had a falling out because Kyle called in imitating Chris Rosen. And he sounded just like him. And so I actually had them on the phone at the same time. And Rosen thought I was playing an audio tape of himself back to him. And did not realize that Kyle was on the phone.
That'd be very confusing.
It was very confusing. And then I think at one point, Chris suggested a film and was critiquing a film that he hadn't even seen. And I thought...
I like doing that.
Yeah, I thought that was inappropriate. But we bring him back for the Oscars. Because he has really... I mean, with all due respect, and Chris is a very nice guy, but extremely shallow assessments of movies. And
sounds great.
But Isabel, much deeper assessments of movies. But before we get there, what is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the day?
It's called the Doug No Show song.
The Doug No Show. The Doug No Show. Like Doug as in Doug, the like
R
Doug?
Yeah, R Doug.
R Doug.
Doug from Jamul.
Doug from Jamul, No Show song.
And I'll look at my email and my Twitter one more time. Oh, Doug, it's almost been 15 minutes. I guess that's the proper time for a song about you not showing up. Oh, Doug. Dougie, 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 Doug, Dougie. I was gonna listen to Doug. I was gonna listen to Doug, and you could have looked so good. You could have schooled me. You could have schooled me, Doug. But you only get one chance. You only get one chance. Jim Reefer Cake don't like it. Oh, another guy who also showed up was Right Wing Mandela and Mark Lewisella. You see, they all showed up, Doug. They're all progressives. They have a better work ethic than you.
Okay.
Do we want Doug to show up?
A very abrupt. I think this is. He must have. I think he. I.
It's like freestyle.
Yeah. 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 I get the feeling he was just trying to kill time and was super high.
It's yeah. It sounds like they scheduled some sort of online debate and Doug
didn't show up, and Jimmy Reefer Cake had gotten super high before the debate.
And remained high for the time that it took for him to send us that, thinking it'd be relevant show content.
Yeah, you can almost hear how high he is in the way that he ended the song. Like, it just sort of like, I didn't mean to hit the button. Well, whatever. I'm not going to record it again.
Can't capture that twice.
Nope. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Isabel Gillies. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, One of the ways in which we indicate who our next guest is for me to say her name. But the even better way is to do this.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Wow. And to think, that is, I mean, you know, when you compare Isabel, the song that Jimmy produces when Doug is his muse versus when you are his muse, it really, I think it captures the essence of both of you, frankly.
It's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, I got to say, I think it is honestly it's a beautiful little song.
It's the one that stays in my head the most.
It's a little ditty. What's that little scratchy noise? Is that her phone? What's going on with your phone, Isabel?
What scratchy noise? Do you hear scratchy from me?
Yeah, let me call you right back. I'm going to ring you right back. We'll try.
Come on. That shouldn't be because this is my landline.
I know, but what are you doing? Maybe you're standing next to an electrical utility pole. Hold on, I'm going to call you right back.
Okay.
Bye. Right? That was weird. You don't hear any static now, so it's got to be over the line, right? This is the problem. They don't care about home phone resident.
Is that better?
Oh, yeah, it is.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Second
try's a charm. They don't care about home phone service anymore, those guys.
I'll tell you something. We almost got rid of our home phone.
I thought you did at one point.
We did, but it really was just it wasn't unplugged. It was like I had to call the company, and it was so hard because it was all attached to the cable box, and it was daunting, and so I didn't call. And then when I did call, it was perfectly nice, and so now we're back, which was the most boring story I possibly have ever told in my life.
So the phone you're using is actually one of those cable IP phones, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's not a cell phone, which makes me happy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it sounds good enough. I mean, the old copper lines are the best, but they're pulling those out of everywhere, so we're not going to get to hear those.
I love this.
Now,
I loved my telephone growing up so much.
What kind of phone did you have? The kind that you hung up that was standing on the wall, like one of those jobbies?
Oh, yeah. Long
cord? We had
that in the kitchen.
Right,
of course. With the long cord.
Yeah.
Which I loved, and that in my I had my own phone in my room too. When I turned 16, I got an extension in my room.
That feels to me like it would have been very dangerous. Having known you, just you in your 20s, I feel like a phone in your room at age 16 would have been a problem.
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, I must have spent. I just gabbed and gabbed, but it was so sort of cute. I was just on my bed with my legs crossed and knees up and talking and talking. I would love to see my kids talking on phones.
Then what do they do now on their phones?
Text, Snapchat.
What's wrong with that? What's the difference with that? What's the difference? Communication's communication, no?
No. What about when you laugh on the phone? You ever getting laughing on the phone with someone? Your tears are going down your face and it's getting the phone wet and you're laughing and you go, ah. Like, all that humanness, you don't get that on Snapchat with, laughing out loud emojis.
That's true. That's true. Although, when Mila, that's true. Mila will laugh with her friends. They'll watch like a video together and then they'll laugh. But they have to be in. But now what Mila does is she will, and of course she's not 16, she's 12. I'm sure by the time she's 16, it'll be more illicit.
It'll be a chip in the head.
Oh, my God. But she will now, like, when she goes to bed to brush her teeth, she is on FaceTime with somebody who is brushing her teeth, too. One of her friends.
See, I'm not down with that. I say concentrate, sweetheart. let's not be on FaceTime.
They will just walk around. She will walk around the house with her buddy on FaceTime. They're not even talking to each other. It's like they're just going. They're both existing. They have this sort of like, it's weird. It's a weird dynamic. But I'm sure our parents were like, what are they doing on the phone all that time?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, hanging up, like suddenly it would be hung up. If I was on the kitchen phone with the cord in my room, it would just go bonk and be hung up. But my kid said to me the other day, without even knowing that he was quoting Will Smith, parents just don't understand. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, that's true.
I said, you know that's a song? Do you know that's like a real cliched song, parents just don't understand? I can't believe it.
No. What is that song? Is that like the Prince of Bel-Air
parents
song?
Parents just don't understand. Yeah. You know.
Oh, is that the Prince of Bel-Air song? Was that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Wasn't it the opening song to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
I think so. No? I don't know.
Oh, man. You know, I saw Will Smith on the street. He was shooting in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it was like a superhero was coming towards me.
Well, he's huge.
The man is huge. And also, there was an entourage around him, of course, but it looked, I mean, if I had to, you know how they say in crime, when you interview someone that's seen a crime, and...
Are you there?
Yeah.
Wait.
But, so, and when you do a crime, like, one person will say, I swear he was wearing a red jacket, and the other person will say, it was definitely a blue jacket, that I know. So that's a whole crime thing. But I swear to God, if he was wearing a cape, I think he was wearing a cape.
You think Will Smith, maybe he's doing a movie where it involves him wearing a cape. Is that possible?
No, but I was just like, but it was also, I was like, oh my God, Will Smith. I was so starstruck just because of, I don't know, he's been around for so long. I couldn't believe it was Will Smith right on 100 and whatever street.
You get starstruck pretty easy for someone who's frankly probably had access to a lot of meeting a lot of famous people in your life, right?
Well, I get starstruck with certain people. Certain people it depends. You know, I got wicked starstruck once with seeing Dan Rather in an elevator. I was like, whoa. I kind of couldn't believe that.
I interviewed him at the DNC, and there was a slight out of body experience with that. Because you're interviewing Dan Rather, and you grew up with Dan Rather, and it was a different era where Dan Rather was probably close to one of the last of those guys.
Like Peter Jennings also would blow my mind if I ever saw him.
Yep.
Here's a great starstruck story. You want one before we start to really roll?
Yeah.
Okay, so a friend of mine's mother was in an ice cream store in Connecticut.
That's nuts.
And she was paying at the registrar. She was there. And she had her ice cream in her hand, and she was paying. And Paul Newman walked in.
Wow.
To the store, quite close to her. And she got so starstruck that instead of putting her money back in her bag, she put her ice cream cone in her bag.
Wow, I can understand that. I mean, Paul Newman, particularly for a certain generation of people.
Oh, yeah. I saw him on the street once. Woo! Blew me away.
John Benjamin and I and Charlie Fisher, my other buddy, we were in Köln, Germany, and we were going into an American Express store because that's how you used to have to do it for all the kids. You didn't have ATMs.
Right.
At times you'd go and you'd have like traveler's checks. Lou Reed was there.
And
I actually, he got his traveler's checks. He was traveling with a woman. I don't know who it was. And, there was an umbrella right at the, thing. And so I went up to Lou Reed and, said, is this your umbrella? And he turned to the woman he was with and he said, is that your umbrella? And she said, no. And he looked at me and goes, nope.
And you say, well, see, I don't mind at all doing that, and I also don't mind at all saying, I'm so starstruck, I have to tell you, I really love your work so much.
You know,
I'm sure Lou Reed would react really well to that.
Yes, Lou Reed was not, he didn't seem terribly excited.
No, he wouldn't.
No.
Ooh, can I tell a Lou Reed story? It's very short. One time at South by Southwest, they were doing a tribute to Lou Reed at the Fader Fort, and he was there, sort of in the roped off section by the stage. And I was like, oh my God, Lou Reed, I love you. Can I take your picture with my Polaroid camera? And he nodded yes, and then immediately turned away. And I took a picture of the side of his face that I will treasure forever.
You know what? That's very funny that you say that, because we had run into, we did not take a picture of Lou Reed until he was walking away from us. So we had a picture of Lou Reed.
He gets the vibe of, you know, I don't really want my picture taken.
Yes.
Well,
and so
that's everything I wanted from that interaction.
And we took a picture of Lou Reed's ass. And then we only took, when we ran into Richard Lewis on that trip, we took a picture of his ass. Because at that point we figured it's a motif. We went with it. But all right.
There are certain celebrities that are open to saying hello, and then certain that aren't. And the ones that aren't don't have to say anything. You just know.
I learned from you, because I've seen you do this and multiple times over the years, where you walk by an actor or someone and you don't even stop. You just go, I'm a fan. I appreciate your work. And you keep walking. And
yeah, that's right.
That's what I do now when I see people who I don't recognize anybody, because I don't have any access to anything that's cultural anymore. But to the extent that that's what I do, that is my model, what you do, because it makes that person feel good. You get to acknowledge that you've seen them on some level, and it's not an uncomfortable situation.
It's not intrusive. It's just a sort of high five.
Right. That's very nice. Now, all right, let me ask you this about the Oscars, okay? Because I also want to hear, I know that you've been at the DMV and you had some type of experience there. But I want to ask you, Casey Affleck, did you hear about this? He withdrew as an Oscar presenter for Best Actress.
Because?
Well, there's charges that he was inappropriate with people that work for him. I guess it was him and was it him and Franco? Was that what it was?
Well, yeah.
Was that fake documentary they did, or do I have that right? I'm not.
James Franco did some not great stuff with. Like, I think he texted a 17-year-old, and he's been called out for sure.
All right, here's a story about Casey Affleck's dark secret, the disturbing allegations against the Oscar hopeful. It just pulled down. Yeah, it's something like that mockumentary that he did with, let's see, keep going. He did a mockumentary. Oh, with Joaquin Phoenix, right. Remember, like, there was that time where Joaquin Phoenix seemed to have gone crazy or something?
Yeah.
And there was
going to
be some
documentary. Yeah.
Apparently, he and Casey Affleck made this documentary, and they were, I don't know the details, but it had something to do with, like, the people, the women that were working for them, and they were, I don't know if they assaulted them, or there were sexual harassment suits that were brought against him by women who worked on that movie. And I don't know if they've been resolved or what, but
he said, I'm not going to put myself in the spotlight.
It says here, these two lawsuits were settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. One woman woke up with him in bed with her, trying to caress her, and it was super gross. And another said that he did, other things that qualify as sexual harassment. Abusive text messages, grabbing, intimidation, etc.
And this has been out there for at least a year, it feels like to me. And somehow he's been able to avoid it. But I guess the idea of him handing out the Best Actress award might have been just a bridge too far.
Oof. Well, have you seen... So David Schwimmer just did these six harassment videos, and I guess they came from another country, had done them too, and they were such a huge hit that he made them. And that six videos, I've watched three, of like harassment happening, a doctor, a boss, an actor, and it's, if you watch them, you'll just think, oh my God, I've been sexually harassed my entire life. it's really a phenomenon, the whole, that it's, I wonder if it's going to change, how seismically it's going to change everything.
What's your sense of that? I mean, do you still find yourself in that position or what?
No, because I'm older and I have much better ability to say if anybody tried to harass me in any way, I'd tell them to go, F themselves and
be on
my way. And I just feel more powerful in the world, and I'm a mother, and I don't know. I just don't think that people would harass me now. Or if they do, it's so identifiable, and I just, immediately. Well, here's the thing. Like, when I was a young actress, I went in to audition for James Toback, but my agent said, now listen, this guy is going to really be disgusting with you. He's going to ask if you masturbate. He's a real freak, but he's going to make an interesting movie, so if you want to go, you can go. And with that warning, I was like, oh, I'll go. And I'm not going to let that happen. Like, I felt all armed. So he did do all those disgusting things, but I was ready for it, and I didn't, let anything happen, and nothing. It was like, I was like, oh, here's this total freak who's being disgusting. He's like an artist, and left. But I was warned. But if I hadn't been warned and I was 20, it would have been a disaster, I think.
And did you have other instances like that as an actress?
Yeah, but as an actress, you have so many, not in the assault, not in the, no one's trapping me in bedrooms and hotels. I didn't have that. But I had, people just talking inappropriately or just, being just sexist and, a lot. But I don't know any actress that didn't.
Do you have casting situations, like where people came on to you in the casting situation?
Well, like casting situations where not coming on to you maybe, but like making you stand there in a bra for a long time, just being like, can you just hold on there for a second while we, bummer things like that. I think that everybody did. In the 90s, I don't know any women who would be like, oh no, everybody treated me respectfully and kindly and never, called me sweetie or, no, I know no one who had that.
All right. Well,
right. I mean, you were doing that. Couldn't you imagine? Did you ever see that going on?
No. I just think that like I don't know. I feel like I had very rare occasions. I think it's just like sort of the type of guys that I am friends with. I don't know. I think to the extent that we ever engaged in stuff like that, it was all sort of like parody. We were making fun of that, and I don't know that we even knew that it really existed in a real way.
Well, we're living in two different worlds, right?
Oh, without a doubt. But I also think,
right.
And I don't know if there are guys who are more conscious that this stuff goes on than me. I mean, obviously, I think like I'm aware of it, a lot more aware of it now, but at the time,
well, you're young too, right? So you're sort of clue. I mean, like Mark Ruffalo came out and said, I could do better. Like, I didn't know when I was young that catcalling, like being like, not that he, I don't know if he did it on the street or I don't know where he was doing it, but just calling some, making a fuss over someone's looks that you don't know or you kind of know. He said, that's not cool. I used to do that, and that's not cool, and I know that now. I mean, I think there are a lot of
subtleties. Yeah, like that stuff to me, like when I was that age, I was the idea that somebody would do that, I thought was like almost like parody. Like, because I couldn't like imagine, like, what do you get out of going like, hey, baby? Like, that's all I remember. I'll tell you what I remember. You remember that microphone thing that when we kids, that you like, you had a microphone that would send it, go into your FM radio, and there was an ad for it where those guys were riding around in a convertible, and they would go, hey baby, looking good, be back to pick you up later. And it was like, we did that over our radio, we talked into the microphone. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Is it Mr. Microphone?
Mr. Microphone. See if you see the ad. Do you, yeah, like, see, like, Yeah, here it is. Wait a second. Yeah, I think this is going to be it. So it was a Mr. Microphone, and that's what it always occurred to me is like catcalling was like, it's like so campy because, play this ad. Maybe it's
okay,
in this
ad. Okay, here's
an
example.
Hold on, here's the ad.
Here's an example. Okay.
All right, here's the ad.
Party's getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
I'm on the radio.
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around. Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
That's what
conventional entertainment. Yeah.
That's what I remember about like catcalling. Like that's like just so dumb. Like
oh no, if you lived in a city, you got cat and you were young and a woman, forget it. You got catcalled every single day. Every day someone's like, "Hey, baby."
I don't
but,
get.
You know,
with a microphone.
But ready for this? Like
yeah.
So I did an independent film, and we're shooting along, and then I had to be thrown into a lake, and right at the last minute, the director says, or someone says, "You know what? I think you should be thrown in the lake without a bra." And it was like right before about to shoot, and I was like, "What?" And I was like, "Well, but." I've been wearing a bra the whole scene, and I kind of looked at the costume designer, and she was like, "Well, it is. We only have one bra, so I guess it would be good because it wouldn't get wet." And I was like, And then you look around, and there are 50 people standing there with mics and you know time and the sun setting and everything. And I was like, "Okay, I get, you know." But then what is that? You know, I get thrown in the lake, and it's like a wet T-shirt.
Right.
Situation. Yeah. But right. I had 30 seconds to make that decision in front of everyone, and if I didn't do it, it would cause more time, and
right.
it was just making more
And then
of a
you're
scene.
The a-hole, because she's being
then
difficult.
Then you're like the fussy girl that is priggish and whatever. So that, to me, looking back, I'm like, now that is uncool. You know, that's not harass. I don't know what it is, but it's not...
It's a power dynamic.
Yes, exactly. It was a power dynamic.
Maybe that's not the most egregious example, but this stuff exists on a continuum. I mean, what you said just now reminded me of the story I told about Terry Richardson, and it was a similar dynamic at play.
It's just a choice that you wouldn't make professionally if you were being respected. If someone said at the beginning of the day, "Now we're thinking about this choice. What do you think about that?" Like hours before.
Right.
We're gonna, you know.
Yeah, then, they put you on the spot.
Right. So it's just bullying it's just uncool. But it's not anything that I thought about until this whole movement came up, and then I was like, "Oh god, yeah, that was not all right for all these older men to be pressuring me like that."
It is that I think is one of the more interesting dynamics. I mean, and the thing is that this happens all the time, right? I mean, people grow older and they look back on their childhood and they think about certain things that their parents may have done or other people may have done and go like, that was not appropriate. Not necessarily. I'm not talking in the context necessarily of sexual harassment. It was just like certain behaviors are not appropriate as you reevaluate them as you get older. And so it's not terribly surprising that you know, we would be having this phenomenon. And I think like, you know, hopefully... It seems to me like it has to help, right? Because...
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, even with the Aziz Ansari thing, whatever you think about that, you hope that the dialogue helps women and men to be able to say, you know, I'm not feeling great. I'm not into this, and I just want to go home. Okay? Right. Like, no hard feelings. Let's just call it a night.
Yeah, and you hope that it helps people to listen when somebody is saying that to them, right?
Right, I mean, but I don't think even that he's been accused of not listening to that. She just didn't like the... She was like, she didn't feel comfortable.
Well, no, he has been accused of not listening to her. She said no in a bunch of different ways.
He forced her to do something?
She said no in a bunch of different ways. She said no verbally. She took her hand away. She walked away. She said, "I don't want to feel forced." And only finally, at the end, when she was like, no, 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 then he stopped. Because in his mind, you know, as long as you're not technically raping somebody, it's fine.
Huh. Well, I don't know. But in any case, I think the all the discussion around it has got to change things for the better, for sure.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. I want to get to these Oscars for 1 second, okay? Of the best pictures, I don't want to get everyone, but Call Me By Your Name, which...
Did you see? I think that was my recommendation last time.
I did not see that yet, but I do have that DVD. I got these.
It was
I get some
my
SAG
recommendation.
Darkest Hour, have not seen that. Dunkirk, did see that. I watched that with Myla, actually. I liked it. I mean, I thought it was like a, you know, sort of like a classic one of those movies that you could see winning in, you know, a Best Picture, but it won't. You know, they're British and they
would
you
be
know.
A very big.
Get Out. I didn't see that. I don't know anything about that. Lady,
you have to. Oh my God,
I got
you have to see it.
What is that movie about? What is it?
It's about a. Biracial couple who go to the girl's white, the guy's black, and they go to her house in a remote country setting.
No spoilers.
And the, what?
No spoilers.
I said no spoilers, please.
Oh, right. Well, that's just this, right.
All right, so Get Out. Anyway. All right, so
it's about race and racism me. And who's allowed to be in certain spaces and the insidiousness of white racism in America.
All right. Lady Bird. I've heard of that. I heard it's good things. Didn't see that. Phantom Thread. I've never even heard of that.
That's Dan Lewis's movie.
I don't know who that guy is.
I can't wait. I'm going to see it this weekend.
The Post. I know, you know, I've heard about that. Whatever. The Shape of Water. Is that good?
Yes.
All right.
I love The Shape of Water.
Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Didn't see it, but it's getting a lot of awards already.
Really? All right.
It's in the J.D. Vance genre. Oh my
God. Wow. All right. Well, I guess maybe I may try and watch some of those, but and I want to get to your pick in a moment. But
Call Me By Your Name. I don't know if it will win, but that's beautiful and has the most beautiful sense of place.
I've heard good
things
about that movie. I've heard very good things about it.
Yeah, and then Darkest Hour. My son liked Darkest Hour. Dunkirk didn't see it, but one of my sons saw it, liked it. Get Out. People love it, but it scared me. Lady Bird.
Why?
You know,
what part?
The thing, what?
No spoilers, but what part scared you?
Well, it's kind of a horror movie.
True. Oh.
All right. Now you ruined that for me. I thought it was just like a nice, like parlor drama. But now apparently it's a horror movie. Okay.
Kind
you
got to
say spoiler alert. Do your sons...
It's hard to talk about the Oscars without spoilers.
I know. Does your sons watch movies like you did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's you do what you see your parents doing. So at any time that they're home and it looks like they have a couple hours, I'll just send them to the movies.
Wow.
Or make them. If it's at home, they'll go to the movies so happily, but if it's at home, I have to make them watch a movie. Like with no other screens or anything. I just have to say, we're going to watch this movie. And you can't do anything else but watch the movie.
Oh, Myla doesn't watch anything without at least one other screen going.
Yeah, I think it's going to cause everybody a mental breakdown.
Yes.
So that's a sort of like I have to really enforce that. But if they go to the movies, they love going to the movies.
Yeah, my kids are not as into it, but I guess that's probably because of me.
Yeah, you just do, you know, if you play the violin, your kids will probably play the violin.
So well, I don't play the violin either.
Or whatever. They're probably going to be funny. Is Myla funny?
Yeah. Not as funny as she thinks. I'm a little disappointed. Yeah, she tries, but I give her, I'd say a B, B
it's
minus.
It's that attitude that's going to make her grow up to be a very funny, if somewhat damaged, individual.
That's right. I'm working, the way to make her funny really is to just make sure that she's damaged psychologically. And so that's what I'm trying to help her out with. It's just to have, you know, some type of psychological deficit that I have provided for her. Now, speaking
yeah, I've
of
done that big time.
All right, before we get to your movie, what happened at the DMV? Did you go yesterday?
I went this morning, and I'm just going to say, I don't know who gets the praise. Is it de Blasio? Is it the DMV itself? Is it who? I don't know who's running the show, but it was the easiest, most pleasant. The DMV used to be like, it was like, oh my God, I've got to go to the DMV. Like, what am I going to do? You'd get three books. You would, you know, put, yep. you know, your life on hold for the 24 hours. This was, if I was in there for 20 minutes, the room was packed. If I was in there for 20 minutes, I'd be amazed. They were like, oh, doop, 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 yep, here you go, doop, 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 10 days. It was the most organized, civic experience I've had in I don't know how long.
You know,
it was a beauty.
This is the thing. They love to crap on the DMV. They love to crap on the post office as being difficult. I relative to like going to, you know, the Banana Republic outlet where they put one person on the cash register for the 75 people who are waiting in line.
Right.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And you think about what it does, you know, like all the what's involved in this. These are major systems, not just like retail selling a shirt. Like they've got to integrate all sorts of systems. I'm always impressed.
Sam, I was so complimentary of everyone because I was like, I'm not going to have to come back here for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You just made something so easy, and so, and it's great because, of course, you're supposed to renew your license, and if it's sort of you're encouraged to do it. If the last time you did it, it was so easy, then it just I was completely impressed.
All right, well,
so
I'm very glad
I don't know
to
who
hear
gets
that.
Who does get that compliment?
Well, the state runs the Department of Motor Vehicles, but the state workers. Kudos to them. All right.
Kudos. Big shout out.
Isabel, film. If I wanted to watch a movie this weekend, which movie should I watch?
Do you have the screeners? Can you watch one of these?
I mean, I guess I could watch Lady Bird. I think I do have access.
I mean, it's not going to... Well, you watch Lady Bird with Mila.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then let's, what else we got?
Wait, is someone groaning? Doesn't think so?
No, I was agreeing. I love that movie.
It was an agreement. It was an agreement groan.
Watch
groan of
Lady
agreement.
Bird with Mila. Watch Get Out with Saul. Scare the shit out of me. Just kidding. Yeah, I would watch. This is my, I'll do I'd say Lady Bird, Call Me By Your Name.
Right.
And here's the thing about The Post. The Post is sort of, even though it's all about newspapers, which are irrelevant almost now, it's sort of great. I mean, it's you could watch with Mila, too.
All right. Lady Bird, Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, and The Shape of Water. Oh, my gosh. The Shape of Water is marvelous, I think.
What is The Shape
of Water? Watch that with Mila, too.
All right. Fine. I'll watch all of them. I watched Hostilities. I got that DVD. Hostiles. That was pretty good.
No. Yeah. Watch Lady Bird.
All right. Forget it.
Call Me By Your Name. The Shape of Water. The Post. You watch all of them. Watch as many as you can.
All right. I'll watch all of them.
My January advice. Watch as many as you can.
Only 4 days left. Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but 5 days left in January.
Get Out, I cannot emphasize this enough. It's as good as everyone says it is. It's so good. And if you find it scary, if you find it disturbing, imagine what it's like to be black 24/7.
Spoiler alert!
So much fun. Spoiler alert!
It's thought provoking.
Quite amazing.
I don't mean to be dissing. It's a very good movie. Everyone should see it.
Yeah, there's no
doubt. Nominated for an Oscar.
It is an Oscar
widely seen.
You know, I will say this. It sounds to me like they're doing better movies that they're nominating for Oscars. Do you think that's true, Isabel?
They do more. They used to only nominate 5, I think. And now I think it's 10.
But
right?
They used to always be these like big, really dumb movies. Like Dunkirk. They would do like 6 Dunkirks.
Yeah, well, they'd only have 5. See, they doubled,
okay, 5
they doubled
Dunkirks.
The amount.
5, you know? Dunkirks. Like big movies that were like epic.
Or The Post. Right.
Yeah, it would be Dunkirk, The Post. I guess that's true. That's the way they're getting away with this.
But most of these are small movies.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know about Dunkirk's budget or anything, but most of these, I think, are pretty small. Or, well, not The Post. Shape of Water. Shape of Water is really good.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Get Out, Lady Bird, The Post, Shape of Water, Call Me by Your Name, not necessarily in those order. You have to go back and figure out what the order is to watch them, depending on who you're watching with. I'm going to watch some of these. It's going to take me a couple weeks. It's probably going to be well past the Oscars.
When are the Oscars? February?
I don't.
I guess. Have you ever been to the Oscars?
Have I ever been to the Oscars? Have I not been to the Oscars? I've never watched the Oscars. I went to Oscar party years ago and did not. It was, and I watched like 1/4 of it, and that was it.
I went to the Oscars.
You did?
In 19, yeah, because Metropolitan was nominated.
It was?
And yeah, for best screenplay.
Oh my gosh. And?
And it was, we sat so far up, but it was, you get very hungry. And it wasn't as fun as on TV, I have to say.
Yeah, it looks like it's not fun. It looks like everybody wants to leave.
You know who won that year is for Misery. What's her?
Kathy Bates.
Name? Kathy Bates. And I was waiting to cross the street afterwards. Everyone's kind of piling out of there, and suddenly I was standing next to Kathy Bates with her Oscar in her hand.
Oh my God!
Waiting to cross the street, and I was like, "Oh!" And I looked at her. I was like, "Yay!" And she's like, "Yeah."
That's funny.
So that was a fun.
Did you
scene, a celebrity,
did you contemplate like taking it and running?
No, I contemplated giving her the biggest high five. I was just like, "You're the." I mean, that is a great movie.
That is a great movie.
Watch that this weekend too, Misery. Ooh. All right,
Isabel Gillies, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half, wherein we'll take your phone calls and your IMs at 646-257-3920. And we have a couple of sounds. We've already played Jimmy Reefer Cake song, right? Just a reminder, this show relies on its members to keep itself alive. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. If you don't have the financial means, but you want access to our daily bonus show, the fun half, send us an email at majorityreports@gmail.com. We will accommodate you. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Also, what else? Jamie, is your Patreon? What's your status?
It's coming. I got some edits back this morning. I was a bit delayed in getting edits because my editor friend had a death in the family, which is very sad.
Sorry.
But I'm probably going to get this post up on Monday.
I just see that Michael tweeted, he's in California. He had a dope sit down with Uncle Chris Ryan that will be released soon on Tangentially Speaking. It was very dope, apparently. So if you're interested in dope, you can score some by listening to that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Oh, and you know, you can also give us a review on iTunes. That never hurts.
That'd be dope.
That would be totally dope. So you go to majority.fm/review, I believe. And you can give us a review, majority.fm/review. All right, quick break. Be right back.
C'est une poupée qui fait noir. C'est une poupée qui fait noir.